WBCA Radio is proud to present City Talk, where fascinating conversation is alive and well, with your host, Boston radio veteran, Ken Meyer.
Hello again, everybody. Reading is something that is a part of all of our lives, and audiobooks are a part of all our lives. And we have the head of the Worcester Talking Book Library with us on this broadcast. Her name is Leanne Hooley. And Leanne, it's great to be able to do this with you.
Hi, yes, thanks for having me, Ken. I'm happy to
now,
be here.
Tell me about you. Are you from Worcester? Did you grow up in Massachusetts? How did you get to where you are now, and take all the time you need to tell us that?
I did grow up in Massachusetts. My family is originally from Cleveland, and they moved this way. So I still have very strong roots in Cleveland. Most of my family is out there. So if I sound Midwestern at any point, I guess that's why. But I grew up outside of Boston, and I went to college in Worcester at Worcester State, and I just kind of fell in love with the city. I'm not a suburbanite, and I never left. So
okay, but how did you get connected with the library? Was there somebody in your family that does not have eyesight, or how did all that work out?
Well, when I was a kid, we used to go to the library a lot. So I think that's kind of where I started in my role in libraries. I did not want to be a librarian. I didn't really want to be anything. It was kind of weird. I remember growing up and everybody kind of knew what they wanted to be. And there was always that pressure to have your mind made up. And I had no clue. So I studied public health at Worcester State, and I burnt out in health and human services very quickly. It's a very hard job. And I was looking around being like, you know, I'll get a master's degree. And what needs a master's degree? What can I do? And I'd been working at a bookstore in Worcester, a Tatnik bookseller, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, which is kind of a legendary bookstore. And I'd made a very good friends with a woman named Jennifer, and who I'm still very close with. And she was in library school and kind of recommended it. So I tried it and I enjoyed it. I started working in higher education. My first library job was at Harvard. And I, up until my career at Worcester Public, I had only worked in higher education. I applied for the Talking Book Library kind of on a whim. I was working at a university that I loved, but I'd kind of gone as far as I could. And I wanted to see what else was out there. So I had a very good friend who still works here, and I'd sent her a note, and she loved Worcester Public. So I applied, and the rest, as they say, is history. So it's a big transition to go from higher ed to a public library, but it's never the same day twice, but it's been a great experience.
Were you immediately appointed director?
This is the job that I applied for. So they did hire me for that. They had two positions open, and they had the department head, and then they had a graduate librarian. And I had applied for the graduate librarian. My friend called me and was like, no, apply for the other one. So I did. And that's what they interviewed me for. So kind of a surprise. I didn't expect to kind of start my career in public in a managerial role. But here we are. Kind of surprised. Yeah. All
right. Now, tell us your duties as director.
There's five of us that work here. So it's kind of my job to make sure the work is being done and it's being done successfully, and my coworkers and colleagues have the resources that they need to do their jobs. A lot of our job is circulation based. A lot of our job is by the mail, just because most of our patrons have visual impairments and print disabilities, and as a result can't drive. So transportation is an issue, getting to the library is an issue. So we provide most of the resources to them by the mail, so including return postage. So a lot of our job is, you know, reader's advisory. Folks will call us or email like, hey, I read this author. I want another book, kind of by that author, but maybe not by that author. So we do a lot of recommendations. We do a lot of suggestions. We'll find books. People will call me sometimes and be like, I read this book when I was 12 and I don't remember anything about it, but it had a dog named like Rex. So a little bit of that. I do a lot of the budgeting. I kind of keep my eyes on the financial piece. A lot of the legislative work, I'm in touch with a lot of folks kind of that represent the Commonwealth on a political angle and try to work with them on making sure that our patrons have resources. What else? It's kind of a big job. I also do a lot of work for the main library because we're located in the downtown branch. So I work with sighted patrons as well. We do programming. We're dipping our toes into that in the public library. We're beginning a recording studio program to start recording books from the Massachusetts area to give to folks all over the world due to the Marrakesh Treaty. It's a big job. And it's funny, now that I'm on the spot, I'm like, what else do I do? I feel like all I did today was answer emails and troubleshoot a database. So I always say it's never the same day twice. I'm thinking, what did I do? I was here all weekend. I made sure that the library was open and closed appropriately. I made sure rooms were available for programming and just kind of helped people find things. So essentially, I'm a public servant.
How closely do you work with Perkins?
Fairly closely. We share a database. We share our catalog. I have a meeting with the folks from there tomorrow. We haven't met in a bit just to kind of see what everybody's working on. They process our applications for our new patrons. They provide the machines that we send out to folks so they can listen to books. We do the large type circulation for the state. We collaborate a bit on outreach because we each carry different areas. So our outreach person and their outreach person are kind of constantly sending things back and forth to each other. They're a bigger institution than we are. They have more of a budget. They have more stuff. They can provide a lot of resources for their folks, but we're lucky. We get to cover Central Mass.
Okay. You're doing some reading, as I understand it. You are reading talking books.
I'm trying. I'm reading it in two different ways. One, I am lending my voice to do some audio recording for the books, which has been very challenging. Editing audio recordings is so time consuming. And it's hard when you're trying to find a quiet area to do so. So that's been really challenging. I don't have a lot of experience in voice work, so that's been a lot. And I also recently just started listening to audiobooks for the first time in my life. So I guess I'm reading in two different ways.
How do you like that?
The listening to audiobooks?
Yeah. Isn't it great?
It is. It's
I love it.
I can read a book while I'm stuck in traffic. When I go out for a run or I take a walk, I'll bring a headphone and I'll listen to a book that way. It's a really nice way to multitask. If I'm in the kitchen and I'm cooking something, I'll turn a book on. You can't really read a book while you're cooking your dinner as easy. So I definitely am a convert.
How do you pick the books that you're going to read? I know from talking to people in Louisville at the American Printing House that they will pick books and they will pick readers. What do you do there?
So how do I pick a book that somebody will read for our collection, or how do I pick a book that I'll read?
Both.
Well, we're still getting our recording studio up and going. We are basically recording books from Central Massachusetts. So, or just the Massachusetts area, New England area. So we're buying a lot of local content. We put them on the shelves and our readers pick them out. We have a few readers that will suggest books and they'll either bring them in and read or we'll purchase them. So we're kind of working on our collection policy, and I'd like to try to stick to that. That can be difficult. We're still in the certification process. So it's a bit of a long slog. We're still kind of trying to figure out what we're doing, but it's been very enjoyable.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a book.
Yes.
That I want you that I mean, I'm taking a hypothetical situation here. I have a book that I want you to read. First of all, does it cost anything? Do I have to pay you to do it?
Nope. and if it meets our collection guidelines, we will add it. As long as you're not in too much of a rush. It takes a while to get the entire thing processed. But we
now
definitely... Sorry.
When you say guidelines, what do you mean by that?
So our policy is basically we're trying to avoid vanity presses. We're looking for things that aren't self-published, because there's a lot of really great self-published books out there, but there's a lot of self-published books. And if you take one, then it kind of opens up for taking everybody. So that's something we're still kind of working on.
I know that organizations like iTunes, for instance, get authors to read their books. I've read two books on iTunes. One by a lady I'm sure you've heard of named Barbara Streisand, and another one by another lady I'm sure you've heard of too, Natalie Jacobson.
Yes.
So in a lot of cases, it's all, do you do that? Do you get authors to come in?
We're going to. We have a program called Dial a Story, which is a phone number that folks can call and listen to stories, either like programming. We have our children's librarians for the library reading stories. I put some old time radio on there once in a while. Our newsletter, the Talking Book Library newsletter, is on there. And we've been inviting local poets in to read. And these poets, they are fantastic. So my goal is, once we get things up and running, is to invite them back to read their books. I did not think of myself as much of a poetry person until I started listening to the local poets read. And it's very moving. It's very engaging.
All right. Somebody's listening to this for the first time. They've lost their sight and they decide, ooh, this sounds better than books on tape. What criteria do they have to qualify to be a member of your organization to get books?
We are looking for residents of the state of Massachusetts. There are Talking Book libraries all over the country. I periodically field phone calls from folks from Florida, North Carolina, California, and we do connect them with their local libraries. But you have to have a print disability. You have to be blind. You have to be low vision. You have to have a learning disability. We also have folks that, you know, maybe they've had a stroke and they can't hold a book anymore. They've got Parkinson's and their tremor makes it difficult for them to hold a book. So anybody that has problems reading due to a condition or a disability, we want to serve and work with those folks.
Do they have to prove this? I mean, I could have sight for all you know. I don't, but you know, I could have. I remember that when I first got involved with Talking Books here in Massachusetts, I had to be a client of the Mass Commission.
Yes.
Is that a criteria for you?
It is not, but we do work very closely with the Mass Commission. I have a lot of friends and coworkers that are there, our colleagues there, and I'm a huge fan of them. I love them very much. I hope they're listening. Hi, guys. We do have to have a signature, but the signature is fairly loose. It could be your doctor, it could be a nurse, it could be a social worker, it could be a librarian. If you come in and you say you're visually impaired, I'm going to believe you and I'm going to sign off on that. Up until very recently, if you had a learning disability, you had to have a doctor of osteopathy sign, and they have the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled has really they've kind of loosened loosened that up quite a bit, and now you can have a teacher sign, or a librarian. You can have an optometrist, ophthalmologist. There's a lot of folks that can sign off on the application.
I have been a fan of Talking Books since the '60s, which is probably before you were born. I read them on record.
Oh yeah.
Okay. They had them on 12-inch discs that you played at 33 1/3. And then they went to 8-inch discs, which played at 16 and then eventually eight.
Yep.
So I've been a fan of this for many, many years. Do you find talking book readers better than commercial audio?
I think it depends. Like, you know, we're going to talk about Barbara Streisand. There is something about hearing Barbara Streisand reading her own book. I haven't read it. One of my colleagues is both reading it in print and listening to the audiobook. And you and I spoke about this recently. It is a long book.
Yeah. It is. It's 48 hours.
Yes. So I don't know where she is on it, but she's trying. Like, I feel like she feels like it's her second job to finish this book, but she is enjoying it. I read Mel Brooks's autobiography a few years ago, and I loved it. And I do want to hear his reading, because he also did the audiobook. And I mean, how do you not love listening to Mel Brooks? So that's really high on my list. But
yeah, it's on my wish list too.
Yeah, he's really something. So I can't wait to get into that. Maybe I'll do that when I finish my current Bard book. But there's also, it's kind of neat to have folks that just kind of want to do this and just want to read a book, and they're not connected to the book, but they want to tell the story and they want to use their voice to tell the story. Mm-hmm. So, and you get that a lot. I don't know if commercial readers are like that, but I see that a lot in the volunteers, is they want to be part of something. They want to bring reading to somebody. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
My parents used to read to me books growing up. My dad used to take a book, read it on cassette, and send it up to Boston.
Yeah.
It was kind of neat when I was going to interview an author. Mm-hmm. I could have them send me the book or send them to him, and I would say, you know, I'm going to be interviewing so and so, and they would read the book. He would read the book on cassette and send it up to Boston, which was kind of neat. It was almost like being home. So I got a lot of books read that way, and I miss that.
Yeah.
I miss the face-to-face contact, and I miss, obviously, my dad reading the stuff out loud. We still have some of the books here that he has read. I'm a big sports fan, and there are a lot of baseball books here, some autographed, that he read out loud, and I just haven't been able to get rid of them because of the sentimental value.
That's a lovely story too, that you and your dad shared reading like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was great. We'd get in the car and take a ride and go somewhere and just sit in the car and read. We read the whole Hardy Boys series.
Oh, wow.
As a matter of fact, by Frank Dixon. And there were 37 or 38 books at that time. I'm sure it's increased by now, but when I was growing up, it was the last one we read was something about Skeleton Rock.
I remember that.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we read it. And I could always tell when he liked or didn't like a book, because if he liked it, he'd call me up and he'd say, oh, geez, so-and-so did. I remember when he read the book, The Burning Bed. Uh-huh. And he would call me and say, oh, my God, he did this to his wife, and he did that, and he did this, and he ripped up this. And if he didn't like the book, I'd call him and say, how's the book doing? And he'd say, yeah, it's okay.
It's really, being a reader, talking to other readers, it's really fun, because you pick up on stuff like that. And I had a book, somebody came into my office yesterday. I have a shared space, and she'd asked about a book that I'd returned. And I was like, it was a terrible book. And then another colleague looked up and he's like, oh, I read it. I hated it too. And we just started kind of dragging the book and the writing style. So, which, you know, maybe is terrible, but there's joy in sharing books, be they books that we hate or books that we love. And I recently read Barbara Kingsolver's Demon Copperhead, and I loved it. And a patron of ours here recommended it to me. And he's funny, because he hates every book he reads. And that's kind of one. He'll email me his book reviews, and there'll be like paragraphs of why he hated a book. And I'm like, why did you finish it? And he's like, well, I started it.
Yeah. So, yep.
I've been telling everybody. I saw a friend of mine last night. And I was like, you have to read this book. So there's just a lot of joy in sharing how books make you feel. It's like art. You know, you look, you know, you see a painting or you listen to a piece of music and you feel something. And being able to share your feelings with other people is part of the experience.
You ever get a book to record that somebody requested and you didn't like it, but you had to read it?
I maybe a little bit. I think the problem here is when we record a book, then we're editing it and we're re-recording it. So even if you started with the book and you enjoyed it, you're kind of done with it by the end of the process. I can't think of any books that I've recorded or started to record that I've really hated, but there's definitely a couple where I'm like, oh God, I'm never going to be done with this. Or it feels like years. I feel like I know where I can recite this thing. Why? But so I wonder, because a lot of those books are good books. And I wonder if a few years from now, I'd go back and reread them or re-listen to them and I'd feel some sort of nostalgia.
I'm a big sports fan, and there is a biography on Ted Williams, which is 35 hours long. Now that's a big book. I don't know how many pages it is, but it's a big book. But the reader is very, very good, and it's a commercial book. And if you're a fan of baseball and if you're a fan of Ted Williams, man, that's one of the books you can't put down.
It's funny because I don't really watch a lot of sports, but I do enjoy books about the history of baseball. And I don't know why that is. I just find the telling of it very fascinating. So I will look into, if you have a title on that Ted Williams book, I will take it from you and I will add it to my to read list.
It's called The Kid.
Kid.
And it's by Ben Bradley Jr.
Kid.
And his wife, or no, his daughter used to work at Channel 5 in Boston. Martha Bradley was her name. And that was his daughter. And he, in fact, the book opens with him describing the process of what it's like to work and freeze a body.
Oh,
because that's what happened to Ted Williams.
Right. That's right. He did the whole cryogenic freezing thing, didn't he?
Yep. And there's a whole, I guess there's at least an hour's worth of talking about it before the book even starts, before you get into the first chapter. But if you like history of baseball, man, I can talk to you for hours about books like that because I love it. I'm reading a book now and it's called Red Sox Heroes Through the Years. And if you're a Red Sox fan, you know, he does, this guy, I mean, they're probably all dead by now, wrote it in 2005, but, you know, he mentions names like Louis Tion, Dwight Evans, and Jim Rice, and Fred Lynn, and Louis Tion, or as he puts it, El Tiante. And it's a great book. So, again, if you like history of baseball, I can't remember the name of the author, but it's on Bard, and I'm sure you could find it.
I'll suggest a book to you that I liked. I think it was called, and I believe it is on Bard, it's called The Glory of Our Times.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes.
It's a great book by Lawrence Ritter.
Yes. Oh gosh. I haven't read it in a few years. But yeah, it was really fascinating. All the interviews with all of the players was great.
Yeah. And they're guys you never heard of, for the most part, but, it was still, and the guy who read it was a gentleman named Bill Wallace out of Colorado.
Wow.
And it's a great book. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know half of the guys that he mentions, but one of them I got a kick out of, and it was a guy named Spex DePorser, and they called him Spex because he was the first ball player to wear glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And he spoke at our school when I was in Batavia. he came one day and spoke in the afternoon, and it was great listening to a former major league ball player talk about playing against Babe Ruth and, you know, a World Series and all that. And I really got into it when he came. But that's a wonderful book. They re-recorded it because it used to be on record, and they redid it on first it was on cassette, then they digitized it. But that's a great book.
I'm glad somebody else has read it. So I sent it to a couple of patrons that have liked this. Have liked baseball, and it's had mixed reviews. So I'm glad that you liked it as much as I did.
Oh, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. But DePorser is in that book, and he also played in Rochester, New York, where I grew up. So it was interesting to hear his comments about that.
Yeah. But
there's a lot of good baseball stuff on Bard. Another one, if you like the history of radio broadcasting, there is a book called Voices of the Game by Kurt Smith. It's a little bit out of date now because it was written in 1987, but it focuses a lot on the early and middle years of baseball broadcasting on radio. And if you have a friend in the office that likes baseball, get him to read that.
Well, yeah, here it is, Kurt Smith. Yeah, I will. I'm adding this to my to-do list. Getting a little unwieldy, but that's fine. I'll get to it. Sometimes it takes me a while. Have you read Ladies and Gentlemen, the Bronx is Burning yet?
Oh, that's about, is it Sparky Lyle?
It's about the Yankees. And it's
I know it's about the Yankees.
Summer of 77, I think. And just a fascinating book, just kind of on the whole... the culture of New York and the Yankees and how they played that year and how kind of everything tied together.
Is that Peter Gallenbach?
I don't remember. I can look it up. Ladies and I'm terrible at remembering author names.
Yeah. Yeah, he wrote some books. He wrote a book with Craig Nettles, Yankee third baseman, and wrote a book called Dynasty, and it covers the years of the Yankees from 49 to 64.
Wow.
And that is not on Bard. That was not recorded, but I know about it because they sent me the book. I sent it to my dad and he read it for me on cassette. So it was not recorded on Bard, but still a great book.
Yeah, I'm looking to see. So I have a different author, and the book that I have may not be on Bard either. It's Ladies and Gentlemen, the Bronx is Burning, 1977 Baseball, Politics, and the Battle for the Soul of a City. It's by Jonathan Mahler, Mahler. It came out in 2005.
Don't recognize the name.
It was... maybe I'll have to see if I can get it recorded. It's a great book.
Yeah, you want to do it for me?
I could see if they'll let me. It's New York, but you know, I mean, with the whole New York Boston connection, I feel like we could make a case for it.
Well, Perkins, most of the stuff that they do is local.
Yes.
I mean, you're my heavens. You're the director. You could do whatever you want.
You'll let me.
I would think.
Yeah.
But if you're willing to do it, I'm willing to wait.
If I can find a way to sneak that one in, I might have to. And then I get to reread it too, so everybody wins.
Yeah, I know. Reading is a great process and a great way, especially if you can really get into a book.
Mm-hmm.
There was a book, we're going to wind up in a whole discussion on this program, but I can't help it. There was a book by Florence Schreiber, who wrote the book Sybil, the lady who supposedly had multiple personalities. And she wrote another book called The Shoemaker. And I couldn't stop reading that book. I had a cassette recorder at home. I took the book with me, as a matter of fact, and read it over the weekend. And recently there is a book, and I can't remember who the author is, and it's called Sybil Exposed.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah. Have you read it?
No, not yet. Not yet. I have not. It's on my list of about 70 or 80 books. But I want to read it. There's so many. I found a book the other day that I want to read that's on the San Francisco earthquake that was in 1906. And that's long. That's 17 hours.
How do you find the books that you want to read? Just kind of like recommendations or?
I check BARD every day.
Oh.
I check it every day. I check it in the morning, and sometimes they add more after 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'll check that. I do it twice a day. Sometimes they don't add books after five. Sometimes they do. But I check it every day. It's like a disease. Because you never know what you're going to find. You can go, or I can go for weeks and weeks and can't find anything. And then all of a sudden, there'll be a book that'll pop up. And oh, geez, I got to read that. You know, and I download it and away we go. So, are there other people there that read books too, or is it just you? Are you the sole reader?
There's two of us. It's myself and Joel Kiesling. He is he's kind of overseeing a lot of the studio stuff as of right now. He knows the hardware aspect of things very, very well, and he has a great voice for reading. So he does most of the reading. We have some volunteers that also read, a couple of my colleagues in the library, and then some folks that are kind of out into the, like, in the community. And again, we're still kind of brand new at this. We're just figuring it out. So we don't have a lot of readers and volunteers yet, but we are starting to collect them. And
since you started this 6 or 7 years ago, whenever you started, has readership increased?
I think so. We have a lot of patrons. We, a few thousand, I think. I'm trying to think of what I'm trying to say. Our circulation numbers seem to be up. A lot of that is because we have people that don't use BARD that will use the Talking Book cartridges. And we're putting 4 or 5 books on a cartridge now. So it's all very bespoke. So it's, you get everybody's cartridges kind of custom made for them in a machine. So we'll take people that'll call and be like, I want these 3 books, but then just find me 2 other ones and I'll read those too. So I feel like that should go up. We're doing a lot more outreach. Things slowed down a lot in the pandemic, but also a lot of people that used to use our services started coming back to us in the pandemic because they were home and they didn't have contact with people and they needed something to do. So they took up reading again. So we've reconnected with a lot of folks that way as well, it feels.
Yeah, what's fascinating to me is you can get a book like Voices of the Game that's 35 hours long, and it can all be on one cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think back to what it used to be on cassettes, and it's just amazing that they can put that much stuff on a cartridge. I love it.
Braille books are multiple volumes. We don't have physical Braille here because it takes up such a lot of room, whereas Perkins does. And I think somebody was telling me The Joy of Cooking is like 17 volumes.
I used to tell people, I remember at one time, the Webster Vest Pocket Dictionary in Braille was 26 volumes.
Not much of a pocket there. Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing because Braille, people don't realize that Braille is so much larger than print. And that's why, you know, take the encyclopedia. Look at how many volumes that is. We used to use that when I was in school, and I can't remember how many volumes it was then, but there were a lot of volumes there.
I believe it.
You know, and that's because it's so much larger. What are people more, I don't know how to put this, what are people more interested in now? Are they interested in politics? Are they interested in sports? Are they interested in cooking? Is there any particular trend that people have toward books now?
People read a lot of mysteries. People want a thriller, especially this time of year. The closer you get to summer, the more people just want something that they can read on the beach that will like suck them in and kind of make time stand still, if that makes sense. So they want to get lost in a book. So we do a lot of mysteries, a lot of thrillers, a lot of suspense. I'm thinking, I know a Kristen Hannah book just came out and everybody wants that. I think it's a historical fiction. We always get that big rush, like the same books that are getting a lot of press by the sighted community, the low vision folks also want. So there's a lot of correspondence between the two.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking, as far as nonfiction, a lot of stuff on the bestseller lists, or you'll have folks that'll call like, oh, my friend recommended this, but it's mainly fiction and it's mainly just like a good page turner. That's what people want.
Have you ever, does the name Jeffrey Deaver mean anything to you?
Yes. He's a thriller writer, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. A lot of his books, I always tell people, he is kind of a combination between a Quincy and an Ironsides, because he's a detective who is in a wheelchair.
Oh.
And that's why I always tell people he's like a Quincy. Because there's a lot of stuff that deals with his books with forensic evidence.
Yep.
And he's like Ironside because Raymond Burr played that role after he did Perry Mason for 8 years in a wheelchair.
I did not know that. That's pretty interesting. I will pass that on to my patrons at call looking for some good mystery books.
Oh, gosh. He writes some great stuff. Some of Sidney Sheldon's books are very good too. Rage of Angels is high on my list.
Yeah.
As far as a good mystery book is concerned. And I like, with another thing that I like is legal fiction books. I love those too. And there are some out there. But unless you have anything else you can think of, I have enjoyed this, and I hope you have as well. And we can do it again sometime.
Love that. I've had a great time talking with you, Ken.
Would you like to give a number for volunteers to call you?
Sure. If you're interested in volunteering with our recording studio, you can call us at 508-799-1730, or you can email us at talkbook, that's talkbook, at mywpl.org.
Very good. Repeat that one more time, just in case people are listening and saying, oh, I didn't have a pencil, I didn't write it down.
It's talkbook, talkbook, at my, like my, WPL, like Worcester Public Library, .org.
Okay. And after my wife gets through teaching school, I'm going to try and work out a time when we can come up to Worcester and meet face to face.
I would love that.
And if there's anything I can ever do as far as books are concerned, please don't hesitate to pick up the phone and give me a call, because I enjoy you very much. I think you're a great asset to the library, and it's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Likewise, I'm always happy to speak with you, Ken.
You may not be someday when I have books that have problems.
I mean, your technical difficulties that you encounter sometimes can be a little befuddling, but you know, we get through them. Honestly, it's good for me to know problems. So
yeah. And I've certainly had plenty of those.
It's all good.
Listen, thank you very much for doing this. Have a good weekend. And as I said, we'll talk again.
I look forward.
That will do it on this edition of City Talk. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to another great conversation with Ken Meyer and friends. You can contact Ken by email. The address is kjmeyer7@gmail.com. That's kjmeyer7@gmail.com. Tune in next time for more conversation with Ken Meyer on City Talk.